91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Stand by, it's a Topical Currents public radio profile this hour. We visit with longtime WLRN staffer and folk music advocate Michael Stock. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper here. Michael is a born and raised Floridian with a special love for the long history of all kinds of American and international folk music, as well as its Florida tradition. His weekly radio program showcases and helps keep alive the genre within our region. Usually there's a live music performance from the studio with the video available online. And then the artist interviews, too numerous to even compute. So this hour, we feature Michael and some great folk music, of course, and to also open our phones. Stay tuned, Michael Stock on Topical Currents, first the news. And 6 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you on this cloudy Wednesday afternoon. Bonnie Berman has the day off, but she'll be returning with us tomorrow. In fact, she told me this morning she wishes that she was here today for this interview, because we have our mutual friend and colleague Michael Stock with us. He's been at WLRN since about 1980, maybe 81. He came aboard then to produce a folk music slot on the station. At that time, WLRN was housed in a ramshackle radio studio, and that's sort of being kind, Michael. That studio topped the old Lindsay Hopkins building in downtown Miami, long since razed and just catty corner from where we are now. Today we'll learn more about Michael Stock and his dedication to the music he loves the most, the many forms of folk music. And he joins us now for the hour. Michael, kind of a strange rehearsal. You engineered this program regularly for what, like 3, 4, 5 years?
I did. And this is so bizarre, me being on this side of the microphone.
Well, you grew up in on the beach in the 50s and 60s. That must have been interesting.
Miami Beach, I grew up in Surfside, and it was so boring. South Florida was such...
Boring?
I mean, it was referred to as... it was South Beach. It was called Miami Beach then, and that's where all the retired people went to die, is what it was.
But Lincoln Road then was still very active, the Burdines and shopping.
Oh, when I was a child, yes. Yeah. When I was in high school, it was working. When I started working here, it was dead. Going down Lincoln Road.
It was just a bunch of electronic stores and some of those electric carts that would go back and forth with the retirees.
Not even that. It was just dark. After 7 o'clock, it was dark. It was dangerous to be on Lincoln Road back in the 80s.
But you went to Beach High. And
Beach High. I got to admit, I didn't enjoy my high school years. It was a very tumultuous time in South Florida with the Cuban immigrants and also with the integration. So Miami Beach then became a vocational school, and it was riots every day. And I don't have really positive memories of going to high school, quite frankly.
And then you carried on to USF over on the West Coast.
USF, going to college, opened my eyes. I became a citizen of the world in college. And I was actually in high school, I got turned on to folk music. And I was quite a loner there. Nobody was into Bob Dylan in high school. Nobody, I don't even think, heard of Bob Dylan back in the 80s and 70s and 80s in high school. And going to college.
Nobody heard of Bob Dylan in the 70s and 80s.
I was one of my favorite classes in high school was popular culture of the 60s, and I jumped at it. I did Bob Dylan, obviously, folk music. And, yeah, most of the class was pretty ignorant when it came to popular culture of the 60s and the 80s.
Well, why did it register with you so much?
A high school teacher played Like a Rolling Stone. It was a humanities class, turned me on to Vivaldi, classical music, turned me on to Bob Dylan, played Like Rolling Stone, and it hit me. I related to Bob Dylan's poetry like millions of others did, and I felt like a Rolling Stone. I kind of became a Bob Dylan, dressed in black, started carrying around a guitar and learning his songs. Never became a performer, but I still loved his music.
But did you then... just start doing research and reading, or
did you know
who like Woody Guthrie was at that time?
No, the first album I bought was it was like Rolling Stone. So then I went to the store and I bought Bob Dylan's new album at the time, which was Blood on the Tracks, which was it's a great album. And then through my research on Dylan, I found out who Guthrie was, and then I found out who the Weavers were and Pete Seeger. And at the time, I thought Pete Seeger and the Weavers were sellouts. You know, they weren't real folk music. They were commercial folk music, not like Bob Dylan. And I've since then learned that Pete Seeger, it's the opposite, more or less, yeah. But that was my introduction to folk music. In fact, my first radio show I did in Tampa as a volunteer at WMNF, it was 90% Bob Dylan.
Now, that just about, I think WNFF came on, MNF over there came on the air about 1980, 81.
Yeah, the year I graduated college, 1980. I tuned into a radio station thinking it was the jazz WUSF station, and I was listening to jazz, and a DJ comes on and says, "This is WMNF. We're just on the air, and we're looking for volunteers to do shows."
Boy, that opens the floodgates.
I was a senior in college. I was a major in geography. I was planning to become a park ranger.
Whoa. You majored in geography?
Geography.
Who majors in geography?
Someone who's undecided for 4 years, and the counselor says, well, if you take geography, you could graduate pretty soon.
That's a path to a high-paying job, isn't it?
Well, I had wanted to become a park ranger. I love camping. I was a Boy Scout. And unfortunately, the year I graduated was the year Ronald Reagan put a freeze on all federal hiring, so my plans changed.
So, let's see, WNFM was sort of a free-form community access station at the time.
Or MNF.
And at the time, I think, like the WDNA was at that time here in South Florida.
More or less. MNF was...
Volunteer producers and...
The organizer of MNF was a little organization called ACORN, which worked to improve the conditions of the impoverished in the community. Yeah. And that's what they did, and this radio station worked to organize the impoverished in Tampa. And ACORN has since been demonized by the right, but nevertheless, it got this radio station off the ground. And what was the question?
Well, I was moving on where you came back to South Florida and you were producing some kind of low-budget concerts, which...
They were folk concerts. I was producing folk
concerts.
Which
almost by self-definition are low budget.
Low budget. I mean, to me, folk music is an alternative to pop music. You have pop music, which is popular. And if you have folk music, what is folk music now popular? So I was up against the wall right there. But I started doing folk music, piggybacking on the concerts that the radio station in Tampa did, WMNF. So when they still have a thriving concert series going on to this day, 20 years later, 40 years later. But... I started booking the same acts they were booking, bringing them down to South Florida and building a folk audience. When you looked at the newspaper back in 1980, 85 in South Florida, of course, there was no internet, no computers, just newspapers for publicity. There was no listing for folk music. So I said, I'll change that. And I started promoting folk music actively.
And I remember when you first started here, you were doing these things called house concerts.
I did a few of those.
In order to promote
my concerts, I contacted L.J. Slavin here at WLRN to help promote my folk shows. And then one day he says, well, I can't help you. I'm leaving town. So I said, well, who's taking your place? He goes, no one. So the next day I was here asking for L.J.'s replacement. But house concerts became into vogue after I started producing concerts, and they were such a lot of work. You know, trying to sell out the Colony Theater.
Now, this is where someone
Road.
Opens up their living room for obviously a handful of kind of...
Those are house concerts. Yeah, house concerts are a lot easier than putting on shows in theaters. Basically, it's a small invite to a group of people. You only can fit maybe 30, 40, maybe 50 people, depending how big your home is. But for artists coming down to South Florida, it's great. They have an audience, and they have a paying audience, and it's a small little living room.
And they can stay there, too.
They can stay there. And the promoter doesn't have to try to sell tickets to or buy advertising. It's just
Or pay rent.
When you talk about these arts organizations, whether it be folk or jazz, even classical, the majority of it is volunteer people who are putting us on. A lot of people are just doing it for the love. So that's where we were. We weren't getting paid or anything. We just put on these house concerts, asked artists to come down, and it was just a lot of fun.
And the radio show then, that was 3 hours at that time, I think, on Saturdays.
I think it was always 3 hours. And I thought it would be brilliant to be able to promote the concerts on the radio that I was bringing down. But for some reason, it didn't work out. I still didn't attract a large audience for my concerts. So I one time decided, all right, enough of putting on concerts and all the stress that causes. I'll just focus on the radio show.
Now, with all these years you've been doing this, I suppose there's been a tremendous evolution in how you do that radio program. If you were to listen to recordings maybe made in those years, you'd probably cringe, but everybody does.
I had a listener once say to me, oh, I've been listening to you for so long, you're so much better than you used to be.
Thanks.
But yeah, I've evolved. I mean, when I started doing the show, I was more of a traditional folky, and I didn't want drums, and I wanted traditional music. And it's impossible to keep that standard because every artist is free to do what they want. Just to restrict them to not having drums is kind of silly.
Now, LJ, when he was doing the program, LJ Slavin, the musician, he was into more old-timey music, the real old dulcimer things.
Well, he played old-timey music.
Yeah, right.
So he naturally
he played a saw, for heaven's sake.
He was great. He was a very good musician. But I used to listen to a show and complain that it was too much old-time music. And I used to say to myself, geez, if I could do that show, I'd do a lot more variety. And sure enough, the thing landed in my lap. He left town, became a musician in Chicago,
right.
Did some stage work. He was very accomplished.
Yeah. Well, why don't we play one of our regionally, our artists in residence, as it sometimes called, before we go out. We're going to take a break. So let's just play out some music and tell us what it is. And
Well, artists in residence, I'll just play an artist that I just had on the show last week, which is Graham Wood Drought, number one. And he was just on the show last week. This is a song. He was
a great blues singer from Iko Iko.
Great. He's been a mainstay in South Florida for decades with Iko Iko. And this is one of his latest recordings, and it's called The Bullets in the Bonfire, featuring Iko Iko. And it's a bunch of different songs. This is not only Graham singing and on guitar, on background, on lead guitar, he has Albert Castilla, who's an outstanding blues guitarist who's since gone on to touring all over the country. But here's Graham Wood Drought with his song Ghost of Mississippi.
We floated into Memphis like pharaohs down the Nile. Rainbows on our shoulders and silver in our smile. And when we walked down Beale Street, everybody knew our names. Our gunshot tombstone bullets and all our loves in vain. Meeting in the bottom. Let the Southern Cross the dog.
So look at that.
Well, the ghosts of Mississippi meet the gods of Africa.
And we're back. It's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with my longtime friend and colleague, Michael Stock. You hear him Sundays on the Folk and Acoustic program. It's been going on for many years, about almost four decades now for you, right, Michael?
That doesn't make it sound good, Joe. You make me sound old when you say that.
Actually, Ted Grossman has a longer program there. So
as long as he's around, I'm younger than him, so that's good.
Okay, so let's talk about the components of the program for those who haven't heard what you do on Sundays.
Well,
a lot of live music. You don't hear that on radio very often anymore.
I think that's an important part of my program. When this WLRN has gone through changes as well, and we used to be a music station, and now we're a talk station, a news station. So When we made that conversion, I thought, well, I better do more talk on my folk music show. And I opened it up to a lot more interviews. And most of the interviews are, I restrict it to mainly artists who come out with some new product, a new CD, or an artist who's going to be in South Florida, and I'm going to help promote their show. And so they come on, and while they're on, it's a folk and acoustic show. I ask them I generally don't have any guests on unless they're an author or if they're a musician. And if they're a musician, I ask them to play a song or two. And when they play a song or two, lately I've been videotaping it and throwing the video up on YouTube.
There's a lot of those to see.
It's amazing.
I was online today.
Well, I've been doing that for about 5 years now, and I must put up about two a week. I interview about two or three musicians every Sunday. And I put their video on the internet, and I have close to about 800,000 hits at the time, which...
And these aren't staged productions. You can really see where you are in the studios with all the walls of CDs And you're in that tiny little room.
I'm trying to cut down that third wall. I just make it accessible. And
I see you in there with your guests. You're recording with you. Got your little very simple lighting set up, and away they go.
Yeah.
I suppose many of these folk artists rarely get a chance to be able on live radio, in a market this size, especially.
No. Well, live radio is also a dying thing anyway. I mean, the freeform radio, the type of show that LRN lets me do. Is used to be a lot more popular in the 70s, 60s and 70s in freeform radio. These days it's very rare. And to have live guests in the studio is probably even rarer.
It's really exciting.
I find it. I find it every week. It's a fun thing to do.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, we're visiting with WLRN folk and acoustic host Michael Stock. Our number, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also email, that's radio@WLRN.org, radio@WLRN.org. I had an emailer here, Michael, who wanted to know about where they can get a playlist for the artists you play on the program.
I do post the playlist right after my show. I type it up and put it on the WLRN website. If you go to Folk and Acoustic Music and scroll down, you'll see the songs I play.
And are the programs typically kind of a thematic?
No. The themes, if I have a theme, it usually lasts maybe three or four songs because I get pretty bored. So if I do a bluegrass theme, it's maybe three or four songs. If I have Celtic music, it's only a set of three or four music. If it's political season, I'll do maybe three or four political songs in a row. But it's free flowing. And if I get a request, and then the form kind of forms around that request. So it's just I just flow with whatever I get.
Of course, social protest has always been sort of the bulwark of the folk music genre. Is that still going on?
Well, that's what got me involved. When I heard Dylan and I got involved, I found out about Dylan's protest music.
Think it was of the Kingston Trio and Peter, Paul and Mary.
You know, it's funny because I've been reading about folk music and the Weavers. This one author accused Pete Seeger of hijacking folk music and turning it into a protest genre.
Probably kept it alive.
He probably kept it alive. He certainly did. He influenced an incredible amount of people. That's about the only negative thing I've heard about Pete Seeger, other than people who don't approve of his politics. But the fact that he hijacked folk music is kind of drastic. But the politics is
a tremendous influence on Dylan.
Oh, yes, it was a tremendous influence on Dylan, and, well, Guthrie more so than Pete Seeger.
Yeah.
But politics is still very much alive in folk music. Roy Zimmerman is probably one of the best. He's a new Tom Lehrer, if you remember Tom Lehrer doing political satire. Roy is going to be in Broward County in next month, I believe, Roy Zimmerman.
Do we have any regional artists who are good on the...
Doing political? Rod McDonald does nice political music. I don't know anybody off the top of my head.
We don't have
right
anybody
there.
On these segments?
On this list, no. On the list, though, I do have Tom Harris. Tom Harris was one of the first people I met when after I did my show, started doing my show 30 years ago. And when I first met him, he was a resident of Coconut Grove. He used to tell me he used to sleep under park benches because he was a homeless folk singer. The old joke that John...
Do some busking there?
Yeah. John Sowell used to tell me a joke. Says, what do you call a homeless folk singer? It's a folk singer without a girlfriend. That's So Tom Harris reminded me of that perfectly. And
you play that now?
Yeah, he called me up. I hadn't heard from him in 25 years. And out of nowhere, I get a call from Chicago. He's up there now. And he sent me some material. And let's just play... I'll tell you what, let's play a couple Coconut Grove.
Why don't we set up Coconut Grove for listeners who are new to the area? The Coconut Grove was sort of the artsy place in the 60s.
It became a Greenwich Village South.
Right.
And people like Fred Neil and Vince Neil. Fred Neil and Vince Martin came down and just
wrote
loved
the,
it
the
down
music,
here.
The song from The Graduate.
Yeah.
Fred Neil. And
they came down to Coconut Grove and
Jimmy
they
Buffett.
They loved Coconut Grove and they made it a home. They opened up a couple of coffee houses. So I'll play a couple of songs now from a couple of Coconut Grove.
I actually saw David Crosby there once.
David Crosby, of course. Well, Neil Young and Joni Mitchell, they all came down to South Florida back in the 60s. But let's play number 5 and then right after that, number 7 back to back. Okay, you could fade those in and out, Jason, all right? This is starting off with Tom Harris.
Henry Flagler's railroad from Miami to Key West. It was to be the strongest, no doubt also the best. Back then only one thing could beat old Henry's train. The fury of King Neptune in the name of a hurricane. year was 1935.
It's really true how nothing matters. No mad, mad world, no mad hatters. Nobody's pitching.
It has kind of a Santana feel to it.
It does. This is Bobby Ingram.
And coconut grown. Don't bar the door, there's no one coming. The ocean roar will do the drumming of any city thoughts or city ways.
Bobby Ingram is still a current resident of Coconut Grove. In fact, this is a brand new CD from Bobby Ingram called Postcards from Coconut Grove. And David Crosby also joins Bobby on the album. And he was one of the early pioneers in folk music in the 60s, helping opening up the clubs that we were just talking about.
How has the internet and social media affected folk music? Is it more accessible now that you don't, that artists can go on YouTube and...
It's affected everything.
Is it more accessible now?
And yes, it's a lot more accessible. You could find everything I do every Sunday on the radio, but it's like my job now is to sorting all that out and finding my favorite stuff and sharing it with you, as well as playing the doing the live interviews. But one thing the internet has done and YouTube has done is increased the level of musicianship. Now you get kids who are taught by the best in the world. They just go to the internet, tune into Tony Trischka if they want to learn banjo, or they can go to Bela Fleck, see the best players in the world and learn from them. Free lessons on the internet. It's incredible. So the quality of musicianship you get now is just way over the top, and it's hard to keep up with it. I mean, I didn't want to bring up Chris Teeley that much, but he's going to be the new host of A Prairie Home Companion, right, which I think is debuting this Saturday night. But he's one of these young Turk musicians, grew up, I think he has a MacArthur Award in mandolin, and he's bringing this musicianship level to A Prairie Home Companion, so it should be very exciting.
Remember when Garrison Keillor retired for a while, and they brought on
Neil for Good Night? I remember that show.
The news guy, yeah.
Neil Adams, is that his name?
Noah Adams.
And then Garrison came back right at retirement.
I've got an email from George. He says, many of Michael's guests also convey the real-life challenges of making a career in music, a dose of inspiration and tough love for aspiring musicians. It's a tough, tough life.
It's being an artist is tough, but I tend to ask questions that people wonder. Like, I think it's a good question, how do you make a living? How much money do you make? I mean, that, to me, if you're trying to make life as a musician or as an artist, a lot of times you have to supplement doing other things, so I wonder how they make a living.
I can remember in the early days, I came in and do some engineering for you. We had Richie Havens here, and also I think Leo Kottke.
That was the highlight. That was an amazing day, actually. They both happened to be here on the same day.
Okay, I engineered those things.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
They were, one of them was playing at a club in West Palm, I think Leo. But yeah, they came out and stuff. I'm amazed at the amount of talent we get here. I was really thrilling.
And let's take a phone call or two. If you'd like to join in with Michael Stock here on Topical Currents, 1-800-743-9576. Also email, that's radio@wlrn.org. We've got Mike in Aventura. Mike, go ahead. Hi.
Hi, Mike. This is an old voice from your past.
Oh, I know you, Mike. Sure. How you doing?
We worked together over at WDNA. In fact, I also was here at WLRN for a while, with the radio reading service, and I've known both of you for a long time, and it's really great hearing you. What I was wondering is when, because I'm into radio history quite a bit, when WLRN dropped their music, were people upset about that? And how do you feel about do you think your folk show will go on for more hours, maybe on during the week or something like that? I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Well, hey, Mike. Good hearing from you.
Okay. Thank you.
It's really up to management. I imagine your folk program is going to continue, of course.
Yeah. Well, change is difficult no matter what, and I'm sure there are some people who are upset when we dropped the afternoon jazz programs. We have the jazz at night now, though. But actually, the change of format to talk increased our listenership quite a bit.
Yes, of course.
So I cannot complain.
And Let's see, before we go any further, we have to talk about Dr. Karen Neal. That's a big part of your program.
I met Karen at a concert, and we happened to share a love for storytelling, which is an important part, in my view, of the folk art. And it turns out we had the common love for Rosalind Bresnik Perry, who was this New York storyteller. And Karen and I said, well, we should highlight storytelling and to highlight folk storytelling, which means everybody's storytelling. Everyone could do music. She's in charge of the. She's in charge of collecting the storytellers, and it's accessible to everybody. Like I say, the public storyteller every Sunday at 4 has become a part of my show, and it's on the internet as well. And every week we invite listeners to tell their South Florida story, and Karen does a little.
So you just send in an email and give a little bit of a biography or something?
It's that simple,
and
yeah.
What your story's about? And
about anything, usually about anything in South Florida. And Karen does some coaching, and I do editing, quite frankly. It's not I take out the ums and the ahs and the you knows and kind of make a little bit of sense out of it. But in the end, it's just I just want to open up the radio.
Obviously, it's not scripted.
Not scripted. And that's one of the things. It's like sitting around the table telling stories.
Well, we're speaking with Michael Stock. We're talking about his folk and acoustic program and also learning a little bit more about Michael. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have more music. Yes, this is WLRN.
This is Michelle Gonzalez, actually, a guitarist with a brand new CD called Guitar Monologue, a tune he calls Divertimento. I'm playing this because it shows the diversity of what I consider folk music. This is a classically trained guitarist, an active musician here in South Florida. I see him in many different types of settings, whether he's playing at art shows or libraries or in jazz settings or salsa and bossa nova settings. But his has a new album, and he's been on my show a few times, Michelle Gonzalez, and just another sample of what I consider folk music.
Getting back to some of your live performance folk projects. I remember you did one in the 90s at the Miami Way Theater that was kind of on a grand scale. You had a big theater to fill.
When I moved back home to Miami after college, I wanted to piggyback on WMNF's concert series. And so I gave myself 5 years to see what would happen. And my parents were very supportive. They bought me a little sound system. And I started a folk club at a little health food restaurant in Miami Beach, and I started putting on bigger concerts. I did some at the Shelbourne Hotel. I produced shows at the Cameo Theater on Miami Beach, the one on Lincoln Road, and Miami Way Theater, the one you just mentioned in North Miami. And, yeah, trying to fill a 600,000, 700,000-seat theater is tough. It took me a few years. I think I did it with a group called Uncle Banzai, and it was with the help of Neil Rogers, because this group was kind of off color.
Did you bring like Beausoleil here or something?
Beausoleil, the
they were big then.
The big Cajun band. They were down here. I brought some Scottish bands, the Tannehill Weavers and the Battlefield Band. These were big names in folk music, but South Florida, they just weren't that supportive.
We have a listener who appreciates, wants you to tell us a little bit about the Hollywood Folk Appreciation Series.
Oh,
the library.
Oh, well, that's right. I've been doing, I did one series, and I have another series coming up at the end of this month at the Sterling Road Library, and it's, I had a piece of paper, and it's not right in front of me, but they were nice enough to their Music Appreciation Series. I'm doing 3 lectures, one at the end of this month and 2 in November, on folk music, and I just kind of...
So you're lecturing now.
Well, yeah, we're playing music and just doing what I'm doing right now, kind of.
Why don't we play another...
Well, I'll play a song that I did off my YouTube channel. This is Rudy Celli, who has a new album out, and she's one of the young...
R-U-T-I.
R-U-T-I, Celli. Her last name is not really Celli, but that's kind of represents the music. She's a cello player.
Oh, and folk cello.
And she's... Well, folk, you know, she'll do anything. I admire this artist because she came on to do some folk music on my show, but I've also seen her in jazz settings and in improv settings. She does a improv with Fernando Perdomo, another great guitarist who since moved to L.A. I've seen her do a type of new age thing. Regardless, she wanted to come on and do a cello piece, and she asked if she could use a looper while she did it. And this is what a looper is she lays a track and she puts another track on top of it. So actually what you're hearing, four tracks, but just one person playing it. Here's a sample of Rudy playing on my show.
A little poison in your blood, you think it's nothing, but then you find it's always been right there in your mind. Your little tears, I'm not that blind. Don't you ever worry about the line.
Rudy is an Israeli born artist now living in South Florida. That is, if you go to the YouTube channel, and if you go to YouTube, search Michael Stock and just put in R-U-T-I, Rudy, and that'll pop up. But I've just seen everything. I follow her career down here, and I'm just admire what she puts, the dedication she has to the music. It's very admirable.
Well, you have compilations of these. There's a lot of historical material that you're going to wind up with of people down the road maybe become really big, and boom, you've got these recordings.
Well, that won't help me at all.
but they should be documented and saved some way, and that people can have access to.
I think that's what the YouTube channel does. Otherwise, you know, I'm just myself putting this thing together, or maybe I can get an intern to archive.
There you go.
My work.
Let's see. We have a couple of emailers. Vicky Richards, a violinist, wanted to say thank you to Michael for supporting all our local artists. When we have a CD release or performances coming up, Michael's show has been very essential and vital to let the community know what's happened and how we're playing.
Vicky's great. She's plays violin, a lot of influential of Indian music. And while I'm at it, another artist I had on my show, Jorge Alfano.
Indian music meaning India Indian.
Yeah, like New Age music. Jorge Alfano was on my show recently. He is also another artist who, for lack of a better term, a new age artist, but he does all types of meditation and introspective music. He's a person to seek out as well.
When you started doing this program around 1980 or so, did folk music evolve the way has it surprised you the way it's evolved, or you thought it would be?
You have to define what folk music is. I mean, there's a traditional aspect of it, which I like, which our roots are grown on.
Yeah, we just heard isn't very traditional.
That's not traditional. But in order to keep current, you have to expand what your definition of folk music is. And so when I get new artists, it's so hard to figure out what it is. If it's either popular music, and if I hear an artist trying to sell themselves or sell out or try to go for a popular sound or a drum machine or something along those lines, it doesn't really fit into my definition of folk music. So has it evolved? Yes, mainly because the musicianship is involved. You look at bluegrass, and it was never really simple music, but you look at it now, and you have classical musicians, these quality musicians doing bluegrass, and it's just phenomenal.
If you'd like to join in and give us a call, we're at 1-800-743-9576. If you'd like to say hello or ask a question about folk music, Michael Stock, 1-800-743-9576. Also email radio@wlrn.org. Why don't we have another song, and then we'll take another break, Michael.
Here's one of my favorite artists of these days, Sol Ruiz. That would be number four. Sol is born down here in South Florida, Cuban American heritage, and she was trying to sell her music here in South Florida. It's very difficult. She has since moved to Italy, formed a band there called Picadillo, and she's touring the world now. But for the last few months, I believe she's been back home in South Florida, and if you're lucky, if you'll be able to catch her doing a gig. And here's one of Sol Ruiz's earlier recordings.
No one ever told me life could be so good. That's just the way. That's just the way. That's just the way. The way I'm without you. I'm climbing up the buildings and crawling up the walls, erasing all your emails and deleting all your
way you cross your T's. I know I'm a little crazy, baby, just trust me. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Trust me, baby.
Ooh, 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 ooh. That's just the way. I swear it's just the way. It's just the way.
And we're back with today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper, along with my longtime friend and colleague, Michael Stock. You've heard him for many years on WLRN each Sunday afternoon doing his folk and acoustic music program, also with the storytelling of listeners, the public storyteller, correct? Mm-hmm. How about, are there still things called hootenannies going on? Am I dating myself? Jam sessions and
hootenannies. You might hear that term as someone is trying to promote a concert and trying to be different, I suppose. But hootenannies, I guess, started off as rent parties in New York City or back in the 40s and 50s. So that name, although there is a group out in South Florida called Uproot Hootenanny that we can play in a little while, but
okay,
that's not much.
We'll go out with them.
Okay.
Now, if I was a parent or a young person, I wanted to kind of get a footing on what folk music is all about. How about five or six examples of classic songs that would be helpful?
Of course, you could start with Pete Seeger. He'll never go out of style. Anything by Pete Seeger, because he's like the father of American folk music. Woody Guthrie as well. I guess he's been called the father of folk music.
And then Dylan, I guess.
Dylan is more of a pop artist, but he's an incredible songwriter. Of course, influenced American culture immeasurably, and his early folk music days was doing the protest music. So there was a window of I guess in the early 60s when Dylan was truly folk music. But he kind of turned his back on the folk community. In 65 he went electric at Newport Folk Festival. So there's always a controversy.
Much chagrin.
There. And well, I mean, who's to say what folk music is or isn't? It's, you know, someone I guess it was Big Bill Brunsey once described it as well, horses don't play it. So everyone's a folk plays folk music. So
now, say, bridging up to, I'm not talking about the real commercial country music, but where does folk music and country music kind of lap over each other on, maybe not on the commercial side, but
I get, you know, if a song is, let's say, over 50 years old, would that consider it being folk music? I guess that means all the old popular country tunes, all Jimmy Rogers and Hank Williams, is now folk music. I guess I suppose the Beatles music is going to be folk music in a decade or two. And what was the question again? I'm sorry.
How it fits with non-commercial country music.
Country music took a turn, I guess, about 20 years ago when the pop charts started including it in there.
Yeah.
So, and so real country, I don't know if it exists. Who knows? I think it's all pop music these days.
Okay. Let's go to another caller. We've got Paul in Tamarack. Hey, Paul.
I wanted to ask about Buffy St. Marie, if he remembers her from the 60s and 70s.
Oh, she has a new album out. Just came out about 2 years ago. She now lives in Hawaii.
Oh, so she's still active. Okay.
Yeah.
She used to perform in Amherst. I went to University of Massachusetts in Amherst.
Oh, she's now known more as a Sesame Street personality.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay.
What is it? How about Leo Kottke? Is he still around?
He's still touring. I haven't heard his name in a long time, but he is one of the giants in guitar, solo acoustic guitar music. If you're going to look at the history of the guitar as a solo instrument.
He sounds like he has four hands.
Oh, he's great. There was a John Fahey who initially took the instrument into the stage, and then there was Michael Hedges who did incredible hammer-ons and pull-offs and techniques. And actually, in between there was Leo Kottke. So, yeah, incredible guitar player, incredible skill, very innovative and original.
I wanted to further when I said if somebody wanted to get a primer of folk music, you know, you said Woody Guthrie and Dylan. Go a little farther with more.
Well, there's the whole 60s.
Less well known.
You can go through the whole 60s folk music revival or scare. Yeah, Peter, Paul, and Mary did it. When I started doing folk music in the 80s, Claudia Schmidt and Sally Rogers was big. The folk festivals, I think, of Philadelphia Folk Festival, the Newport Folk Festival. You could just, in fact, I was on YouTube And you, if you Google Alan Lomax, you see some great original folk music on YouTube. It's just incredible what they access, things that you can access these days.
And what's he like?
Alan Lomax, no, he was just a collector. He went around and went to prisons, and he went out back in the 19... He and his dad back in the 30s, 20s, 30s, and 40s went to prisons to seek out folk music. And they shunned anything popular. So there was a lot of music they missed because they thought it was too popular. But they went to places like log cabins in the middle of mountains or prisons. They were famous for prisons. John Lomax is famous for his first collection of cowboy songs out in Texas and bringing songs like Yellow Rose of Texas and Home on the Range and bringing that into popularity.
I saw a great documentary on the guy that went around and recorded like people of the... like the original Carter family. And,
yes, Ralph, I can't remember his name, but he had the original recording session at Bristol, Tennessee, Ralph Peer, and he took advantage of in 1927, I believe, he wanted to make albums, and he realized that he could sell black artists to black people and make lots of money. So he went out into the mountains and had like an open mic, a little audition, and he discovered the Carter Family, which revolutionized country music. He discovered Jimmy Rogers at that open mic, and he made a lot of money off this music. It wasn't called folk, because I don't think folk probably would have hurt the sales of it. It was country, or he called it hillbilly music.
Oh, yeah. Let's see, another emailer. Smithsonian Folkways label has unique folk recordings. Is that a good place?
Oh, great. It's incredible. That's where Folkways Records, Mose Ash, back in the 40s and 50s, collected a lot of music in the 60s, and Smithsonian Folkways bought his collection, as well as a numerous other collection. They have Joe Glazer's collection now with early political music. So Smithsonian Folkways Records is phenomenal. Well, great Lead Belly, all of Woody Guthrie's recordings. It's really very good.
Do you play any of that kind of stuff?
Oh, absolutely.
Like Lead Belly?
I absolutely do. But I try to measure it between old traditional music, what our traditions were built on, as well as the new music that's coming out and artists that are trying to make a living these days. So I try to play the balance and remain current and try to play young artists, because I think that keeps the show fresh, is knowing that you're actively trying to be new.
Yeah, many of the selections you played today on this program, I wouldn't have said, oh, that's folk music.
Who says what folk music is? You know,
that's about the fourth time. I guess you just can't do it since you bring it up all the time.
What I say it is what I say it is. You know, what is folk? I say it's what I say it is. You know, it sounds kind of conceited, but it's my show, and I get to decide what folk music is not. Who knows? But before I run out of time, I also want to mention that there's South Florida. There is a lot of folk music happenings in South Florida. Luna Star Cafe is really one of the only places in South Florida that regularly showcases the music. They have actually a songwriters workshop there every month, put on by the Nashville Songwriters Association. There's another group that's
Luna Star. Where's that?
That's in North Miami, and she's been there for about 30 years herself, I believe. And there's another group that recently started called Folked in Florida, F-O-L-K apostrophe D, and it's a group of about five or six musicians, and you could see them around. I think currently they do a monthly show at Churchill's, but Lone Wolf, Little Babe, Lone Wolf, Barely Damned, Baby Bear, a group of, and Bora, there's a group of musicians, fairly open. Anybody could participate, but it's actually an active group of promoting folk music and the traditions as well. But if you search around, there's a lot of stuff. The Broward Folk Club puts on their South Florida Folk Festival every year, which is coming up at the end of January of next year. And the Folk Club of South Florida, they put on a show every month at Luna Star. And there's still a tradition of South Florida folk artists that have been around since my show. Rod McDonald is very active. Grant Livingston, Amy Carroll Webb is still promoting it. And Keith Johns is going to be on my show this week. He has a new CD coming out, and we'll be featuring it this week on my show.
More about Keith Johns.
He has a new album coming out, and he's going to be in concert, I believe, next Saturday at the Wynwood Yard, helping promote his new CD. And he's, I think he was a college graduate, but he decided to become a musician and songwriter. So he's devoting his life to the art of it now. And so I'm looking forward to hearing what he sounds like in his new CD.
So not really many of these artists can really support themselves playing folk music.
It's very difficult.
Probably rare.
You'd have to have very low standards of living if you want to, be willing to basically live out of your car almost, and or and And if you're willing to put the time in, it's just a matter of persistence. It's like with any art. You just got to be consistent, and you'll grow, and you'll develop your following. And I think that's what my job is try to expose a lot of these artists.
We're speaking with Michael Stock. Of course, you'll hear him every Sunday afternoon on WLRN doing his folk and acoustic music program. And tell us a little more about the Florida Folk Festival. You used to go to that every year. I don't know if you still do now.
I do. It's been through a lot of Hurricane, I believe it was Hurricane Andrew, still a long time ago. But that kind of threw off the flow of the festivals. But right now they're being fairly consistent every for about past four years there at U Birch State Park in Fort Lauderdale. It's a beautiful space right off Sunrise, I believe, right by the ocean. And January 27th, 28th, they have a national songwriting contest that brings in really incredible group of talent. And South Florida during the wintertime, a lot of artists want to be here during the wintertime, so the quality of musicians are usually pretty good.
And also another emailer says, WLRN studio for performance is tight, but I've always had a great time with my various ensembles. There's a dialogue, and all of us come away with having new information, sharing our music, and hope for the future of live music. Thank you, WLRN, and thank you, Michael Stock. Once again, Vicki Richards.
Oh, that's Vicki again. Okay, good, Vicki. I also want to mention real quickly Josephine Phoenix, who's another very talented artist who lives in South Florida. She's a musician as well as an actress, and I saw her last week on a new TV show called My Life in a Telenovela. So I just want to give a shout-out.
Telenovela. Oh, yeah, the novellas.
The telenovela. And she's just a character in there who's supportive of one of the main performers. So it's fun watching her on TV. And just give her a shout-out.
And bring me up to date on one of my favorite artists here, Grant Livingston, who composes some great South Florida-based.
Oh, great.
Music.
Yeah, he's focused on the environment, and whether it be water or Malaluca or the islands we have here, he could always be found at different events that promote South Florida. Let's say he was at the Redlands. I think this weekend he's going to be at the Redlands Plant Fest over in Homestead. But he's still active. He has a new CD out, always writing music and recording music.
And how about another selection with Uproot Hootenanny?
Uproot Hootenanny. I mean, I didn't even get into the bluegrass local scene, but this is one of the local bands who's, I just talked to them today. They're on their way to the Swanee Fest up in northern Florida. And they're a local bluegrass band that takes all different types of influences for their music.
She's on her way. She's on her way out. She's on her way out. And the whiskey's going down. Fuel up that rocket, gonna blast out into space. Like a hungry dog looking for a tail to chase. Blow off the roof, start howling at the moon.
Well, good foot-tapping music to go out with, Michael.
Thanks, Joe.
It's been a great pleasure to have you on, Michael Stock. Of course, what time? Folk and acoustic music each Sunday.
From 2 to 5.
2 to 5 with the Public Storyteller. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Joe.
As always. And that wraps up our Topical Currents Profile Edition. It was produced by Polly Landis, technical direction from online coordinator Jason Zabka. Richard Ives is lead producer. And for a free audio download copy of today's program, they're easy to find at our website, wlrn.org. Go through the radio link. Also, we have a Topical Currents Facebook page updated daily. And tomorrow's program is a full hour with chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer. We'll present a restaurant survival guide with Stephen Perricone and acclaimed chef Michelle Bernstein. Thanks to our callers during this hour. This is Joseph Cooper. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.